Blog Talk Radio.
How's everybody doing today on this lovely Monday? Man, we got some fun for today, man. Lined up. It'll be a roller coaster. We got Donald Trump. Oh, God. I feel like we have to do a Donald Trump story every single day. I don't want to do a Donald Trump story every single day, but I feel obligated to do that. We also have David Brooks, who's a writer for the New York Times, and he decided to come out swinging against Bernie Sanders. Why? Because Bernie Sanders is actually making a difference. Bernie Sanders is actually surging in the polls. Bernie Sanders is actually scaring the establishment. So you have to send out the establishment shills to try to rein in the Democratic base. God, that segment pisses me the fuck off. We're going to get to that probably within this first 30-minute block. Alan Grayson announces he's running for the Senate, so naturally, it's not even the people you'd expect, but MSNBC decided to try to rein in the Democrats as well and say, well, you know, we could be on the side of Democrats, but make sure they're establishment Democrats. It can't be a guy like Alan Grayson. I mean, come on, he's too far left, they say. This is the supposed liberal channel. We'll talk about that a little bit. Then we got Limbaugh lecturing the Pope about capitalism. Hoo-hoo-hoo, that's adorable. We'll see how little Rush knows about the subject. Spoiler alert, he knows about as much about that subject as he does about every other subject. Namely, absolutely nothing. Then I got Fox News pastors shoving their foot in their mouth. Oh, God, he's so confident, he's so sure that he knows what the Bible says on immigration. He gets it exactly backwards. Alex Jones talks about gay rights and pulls a classic Alex Jones move. He starts out trying to sound like moderate and reasonable, and then by the end of the segment, he's talking about asexual humanoid fucking robots or some shit. And what exactly did the textbook say in Alabama fairly recently, and how does that relate to the struggle today for rights for African Americans in the South? When I tell you, or when I show you, I'll quote for you exactly what these textbooks said very recently. And when you see that, what happens is you're going to go, oh, I see. So basically an entire generation of white Southerners were absolutely brainwashed into believing that they were the good guys all along, that there was never really anything wrong with slavery. I want to bite my tongue. I can continue here, but there's so many different aspects to that story that you're going to find fascinating, and I'll give you direct quotes from the textbook. It's incredible stuff. And also we got anti-porn activists are trying to sink their fangs in the government, and they're trying to link into issues that are much more debatable. So they take something that's actually fucked up, like a real issue, and then they'll say, because that's a real issue, oh, God, we need to do something about porn. How dare, from my cold dead hands. What Charles did, what was his name? Charlton Heston or whatever the fuck his name is. I know I should know that. The right wingers are going crazy. What he said about guns, I say about porn. That's the way it works. You know how he said about guns? When you pry it from my cold dead hands. Yeah, I say that about porn. So, all right. Let's get started here, and we'll kick it off with our buddy Donald Trump, because of course. Talking Points Memo is reporting on Donald Trump's rise in the Republican primary. We covered on the show Friday that he's actually leading, according to a national poll. So this isn't like, you know, hey, this small polling company in South Carolina or in Iowa, where they usually do go for extreme candidates, like they went for Rick Santorum for the last presidential election. This isn't that. We're talking about a respected polling company, a national poll, Donald Trump was leading among the Republican candidates. Very disastrous, and it shows you something about the current state of the right-wing base. So Talking Points Memo is reporting on this, and they say the following, quote, Trump stumped through Las Vegas and Phoenix over the weekend while railing against illegal immigration. Okay, so that's not surprising so far. They say an anonymous attendee of one of his speeches revealed that Trump said it was wrong for the U.S. to invade Iraq. Okay, good. As he believed a strong Iraq was necessary in order to keep a buffer with Iran. Okay, so far so good. I don't see what's the problem here. Very next line. Here's what he said, quote, instead, we should have invaded Mexico. What? Okay. What? No, so it was a closed-door event. There were actually a bunch of, like, conservative celebrities there, like Lou Ferrigno was one of them that was there randomly, if you could even call him a celebrity anymore. And Ann Coulter was there. And so he's rambling on in his speech, the classic way Trump does. And he's like, yeah, you know, Iraq, that was a mistake. Again, that's reasonable. But then he's like, oh, yeah, you know, we should have just invaded Mexico instead. No, this guy's he's a crazy person. Now, remember, when in previous speeches at CPAC, when he spoke about Iraq, he would say, well, look, I wouldn't have done the war in the first place, but since we did it, to the victor go the spoils. You should steal the oil now that we're there. So he's saying, take a sovereign country, steal their shit, even though it was an accident, it was a problem, it was the wrong move to invade them in the first place. It violated international law, we couldn't do it, we did it anyway. Instead of saying, hey, let's pull out and apologize, he's like, no, just since we're there, fuck it, pillage everything. Grab whatever natural resources you can get your hands on. So he said that in the past. Now he's like, no, seriously, we should have invaded Mexico instead of Iraq. Now, could you imagine any leader of any other country or any other potential leader of another country just musing out loud about stuff like this? Like, he's proposing something that's so extreme that it goes even beyond the Bush Doctrine. Like the Bush Doctrine of you can wage offensive wars, because this is like, wage an offensive war against an ally. There's not even the pretense. There's not even like a fucked up narrative you could use in order to say, hey, we should probably invade them. It's just, invade them. But why, Donald? We have fucking trade deals with Mexico. They're right on our fucking border. And he just thinks they're the bad guy. Well, why are they the bad guy? Well, they, you know, we have immigrants coming in here. And? What's the connection? I don't see. And I'm not kidding when I say this. He actually believes that Mexico is sending in undocumented immigrants. Like, it's not, he doesn't think, like, oh, people are escaping from South America and drug cartels and stuff and coming here. He thinks the Mexican government is meeting with the people that they send here. Like, it's a plot from Mexico to get rid of all their bad guys. Dude, how fucking insane are you? And by the way, think about how backwards this is, because what's one of the main reasons Mexico and South America are struggling? The fucking drug war, man. Because you made drugs illegal, you gave a monopoly to the drug cartels, and you made them even more powerful. You gave them a monopoly on the fucking market. So now anybody who buys cocaine or weed anywhere in the U.S., chances are it came from South America or Mexico. So now it's a narco state down there. It's a narco state because of our shitty drug policies. So we fuck up Mexico, their economy, and their government, and their current situation. And then you have idiots like Donald Trump say, well, we should fucking invade them. So fuck up the country even more? And based on what? There's no threat. They're not trying to invade us. They're not sitting there plotting, you know, we'll make our move on New Mexico any day now. We're about to do it. No. They're fucking cowboys, man. That's what they are. They're wannabe John Waynes is what it is. They think, well, we're the good guy no matter what we do, and of course I want to be like John Wayne or Steven Seagal or Chuck Norris, and I want to be, you know, shoot 'em up cowboy kind of guy. So, yeah, talk to him. We should go to Mexico, because sometimes some people get into the U.S. through Mexico when they're trying to create, like, a better life for themselves and whatnot, fucking assholes. Leading in the Republican polls. I repeat myself, leading in the Republican polls. I wish I could remember which polling company it was, too, by the way. I want to say, oh, The Economist was one. Oh, The Economist and YouGov it was. It was those two for a poll, and the article was on Vox. Isn't that incredible? This is the fucking guy who's leading. Good googly moogly, as they say, as the kids say. The kids don't say that. People in, like, 1920 said that, but now the kids are going to say that. We're bringing it back. All right, let's move on here to media attacking Bernie Sanders. David Brooks is a writer for the New York Times, and he's what I like to call a fake centrist. So he tries to find the middle ground between corporatist Democrats and corporatist Republicans. And then he wants you to pat him on the back because he found the middle ground that is not actually the middle, and he wants you to call him a moderate. So naturally, this is the kind of guy that Obama loves. Even though, keep in mind, he's against pot, and he says that the U.S. should, quote, civilize the Middle East, and he thinks that money in politics is totally cool and totally normal. I mean, he really is an idiot, but Obama, being classic Obama, loves him because the guy pretends to be centrist. So today, we have more silliness from him. Here he is on Bernie Sanders.
Talking about this for several weeks now, about how Sanders is drawing bigger crowds. How do you see this dynamic playing out? Bernie Sanders playing to the left in the party and what it's doing to the Clinton campaign?
Well, there is and always has been a university crowd left in this country, a progressive element at our many fine universities. And he's playing to that element. But that element is not big. It's not even big within the Democratic Party. He does not get the working class. He does not get the suburban voter. He does not, by and large, get African-American Latino voters. So there's a huge ceiling on what he can do. And for Hillary Clinton to be fearing him strikes me as wrong-headed. She's still the overwhelming favorite, no matter how big a crowd he can get in university towns. Second, she has to be aware that she lives in a country where people are quite suspicious of government, more suspicious of government than they are of business. And in my view, on substantive grounds aside, just on political grounds, if she goes over and seems like a very conventional big government liberal, it's going to be much easier for any Republican to run against her, because this is not a country that is sanguine about government.
Except you just made that up. Now, can he point to certain polls and say, oh, look, I'm right. See, this says that the American people are more open to business than they are to government or whatever the case is. I'm sure there's some kind of cherry-picked polling data he can go to say, see, I'm right. See, I'm showing you right here. But what's the problem with what he's saying? The term government is so broad and so vast, and government, you know, encompasses many, many things. And not all government is the same. So it's the government when you look at the fucking, you know, pothole on your road. Well, you could say that that's an aspect of government. Government is when you invade countries and do drone warfare. That's government. But government is also Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and education spending, which the American people absolutely love. So they may hate the fucking potholes, and they may hate the wars overseas, and they might say government's too big there. The NSA, they might say government's too big there, spying on us. But it's not big enough when it comes to healthcare and education, for example. So to just make a broad statement, like, the American people don't like government. That's such a ridiculous generalized comment that it's hard to take it seriously. So that's fault number one with his argument. But problem number two is he says, well, Hillary shouldn't be afraid of Bernie because Bernie's coming from her left. This is the exact same thing that people said during the last primary Hillary was in. What happened in that primary again? I'm struggling remembering. So Hillary Clinton went out there, made a very centrist, pro-establishment, corporatist argument like David Brooks wants, and then a guy named Barack Obama came up from her left and said, hey, how you doing? I'm going to win this thing now. Step aside. So this establishment bubble wisdom is so fake and so made up, but yet so pervasive in Washington and New York. But that's the thing is, empiricism is irrelevant in that bubble. Facts are irrelevant. Objective reality is irrelevant in that bubble because they're so up their own asses and they love, you know, the billionaires and corporations so much that whatever narrative suits them the most, that's what they default to. And then finally he goes, Well, you have to understand that the U.S. always had a university left. Now, do you understand what he's trying to do there? He's trying to, like, brush aside the Bernie Sanders supporters. Like, yeah, oh, I get it. Sure, these are just like the hippies who were against the Vietnam War back in the day, and they smelled bad and did LSD and wore tie-dye shirts. Gross. It's a university left crowd. It's a way to marginalize them and say, you know, let them complain about lack of women in video games or something like that. This isn't a serious crowd, okay? But again, what's the problem with this argument? The problem is Bernie Sanders is not representing just the university left crowd. Bernie Sanders is representing the American people. Now, he says, well, the polls don't show that. Yeah, but you got to give it some time, big guy. He's like, Hillary's still leading. And Giuliani led at around this time back in 2008, 2007, 2008 with the Republican primary. He was leading in every single poll. Then what happened? He shit the fucking bed. Why? Because his message wasn't that appealing, and he wasn't that appealing as a candidate. And the same thing happened to Hillary the last time around. It could very well happen now. This idea that, like, well, you know, he doesn't represent these people because it's not reflecting it right now. But wait, the trends are moving in that direction. He also said, well, Bernie's only packing these college towns. That's not true. How many stories have we covered? He's in bumblefuck Iowa, and it's a gym that seats like a couple hundred people, and there are thousands that show up. In Madison, Wisconsin, he packed almost every seat out of 9,000. This idea that he's just representing a fringe, marginal group, the hippies, the crazy people, you know, that's the far left. They're not real in terms of the American public. Dude, look at the other polls that you're completely brushing aside here. You're brushing aside the issue-specific polls, the policy position polls. Because when you look at that, Bernie Sanders is representing everybody in America. And that's not just the majority of Democrats, also Republicans, too. So go issue for issue, raising the minimum wage. Bernie Sanders says, let's raise it. 80% of the American people say, let's raise it. When it comes to background checks for guns, Bernie Sanders is on that page. Over 90% of the American people are on that page. Stopping all the ridiculous wars overseas, Bernie Sanders is on that page. Only 17% of the American people said, hey, let's stay in Afghanistan. I mean, you want me to keep going down the list? There are, on virtually every issue, the American people say, we want what that guy wants. So for you to brush him to the side and act like he's not a serious contender, you're only doing that because that's your bias, and that's your opinion. And we all know you don't give a damn about the facts. You're the kind of person who just looks at the Washington bubble, the establishment bubble and their fake wisdom, and you embrace it and think, it must be right because I hear it at the cocktail parties. Well, it's not right. Okay. That was fun. This fucking idiot. We knew they were going to do it, though. Watch, they're going to continue to do it, man. They're going to continue to do it. They're going to try to dismiss Bernie Sanders and dismiss him and dismiss him and dismiss him. Just watch. The more he surges in the polls, you'll find that the more he surges in the polls, the more they dismiss him. That's what you're going to find. Because when they notice that, oh, my God, he might actually have a chance, they're going to say, code red, tell the American people he does not have a chance to try to make it so he doesn't. Try to will that into reality. Okay, let's move on. Sticking with this same theme here, let's go to Alan Grayson. Alan Grayson announced that he's running for the Senate, and MSNBC, of all networks, decided to question his legitimacy.
So could this loose cannon candidate blow the Democrats' chances to win the Sunshine State back in 2016? We're back with the roundtable. So, Sabrina, let me start with you. And we started the show talking about the dilemma that Republicans face when it comes to Donald Trump and all the inroads Republicans would like to make with Latino voters, with voters they did not win in 2012, and all of the messaging nightmares that Donald Trump has caused them. Now you look at Democrats trying to win back control of the U.S. Senate in 2016, Florida, a prime pickup opportunity for them. And now that you have this situation where Alan Grayson wants to run, he speaks the language of the base. How can the Democratic Party in Florida keep him from being their nominee without riling up their base in revolt?
Well, it certainly poses a significant challenge, and I think, as you mentioned, the Republicans very much don't want Donald Trump to become the face of their party, and national party Democrats, as well as strategists in Florida, they don't want Alan Grayson to become the face of the Democratic Party over there. One of the things about him is, as you mentioned, he has absolutely no filter. There's no telling what he might say, when he might say it. The questions have been raised about his ethics. He had a very, very ugly and public divorce. So I think they feel that he would be a distraction. Patrick Murphy, on the other hand, he defeated Alan West in one of the most expensive House races of 2012. He's a play-safe Democrat, and I think they have a really solid shot with him. So, you know, there's not much they can do about Alan Grayson throwing his hat in any way other than just hope that Patrick Murphy is able to stay on message and rally the support that he needs.
Well, they've recorded, it's the tone, though, isn't it? I mean, Alan Grayson obviously is pretty far out there on the left, but we just did a segment about Bernie Sanders. You'd also say he's pretty far out there on the left, but with Alan Grayson, you get extra piece where it can become very strident, it can become very personal, it can become very edgy, and the message then, the liberalism itself, almost gets lost in the bombast.
Well, it is. Sometimes his methods distract from his message. And he reminds me, in a lot of ways, of Newt Gingrich. Remember when Newt was coming up, the enemies on the left were socialists and communists. And he would just come up every time something bad happened in the nation, he would blame it on the leftists and the liberals and the Democrats. And his rhetoric was exceedingly excessive and extreme. Still ended up working for him for a while. He got to be House Speaker. I'm not sure Alan Grayson is going to win the Senate primary, but Democratic establishments are always worried about, you know, people who are more to the outside ideologically than the center.
This is a perfect example of false equivalence, where they're saying, well, Alan Grayson, come on, he's really far out there on the left, he's a little crazy, and he's not centrist, and this may be a problem for the Democrats, and, oh, let's compare him to Donald Trump and Newt Gingrich. No, see, what you're doing here is you're pretending like the extremes on both ends are equally crazy and equally wrong, when the reality is, the so-called extremes in the Democratic Party on the left are right in the middle of mainstream opinion in the United States of America. Just like with Bernie Sanders, look at the policies that Alan Grayson wants to implement. And when you do that, you find out very quickly the American people agree with him. They agree with him on almost every single issue. End the wars, get the NSA out of our life, regulate Wall Street, increase the minimum wage, protect Social Security and Medicare and education spending. These are all things that the overwhelming majority of the American people are on board with. But you're treating Alan Grayson like he's a buffoon. You're treating him like Donald Trump. You're going to compare him to Newt Gingrich? But that is a false equivalence. There is no real equivalence between the two. The only area where you could say, well, in that area they're somewhat similar is... what did Steve Kornacki say? Tone. But here's the thing. You can bring up the fact that, oh, his tone is very loud and in your face, like some people on the right, but that's as far as the comparison goes. What they do is they say their tones are similar, and, oh, that means they're similar in almost every way, and, oh, my God, isn't Alan Grayson going to hurt the Democrats' chances? But you know what else pisses me off about this? Motherfucker, we have the evidence. They make it seem like, well, I'm posing the question, who knows how this is going to work out? What happened in the last election? You know Alan Grayson is a congressman, right? So what happened when he ran the last time around? You have an answer to your question already, but you didn't bother to do the research or look it up or discuss the actual facts in this case. Alan Grayson won in a landslide. He won in a landslide in an election where overall the Democrats got their fucking clocks cleaned. Why did the Democrats get their clocks cleaned? How did the Democrats get their clocks cleaned? Because virtually all the other Democrats took the advice that MSNBC is giving right here, where they say, oh, be more centrist, be more pro-establishment, be more pro-corporatist, play ball more, don't be so sharp in your tone. And then when they did that, what happened? They all fucking lost. Now, again, you say, well, come on, Kyle, that's going too far. Is it going too far? We know exactly the candidates that lost by the widest margins. Alison Lundergan Grimes, for example, running against Mitch McConnell, who is not viewed favorably in Kentucky, and he's been a senator since 1807. But somehow he won re-election. Why? Because Alison Lundergan Grimes ran as, I'm Republican light, I'm super centrist, I agree with the establishment, I'm not liberal at all, I'll watch my tone and make sure I'm not too angry and loud about my beliefs. Okay, well then you got your fucking ass kicked. Mark Pryor, another perfect example. In Arkansas, I believe it was, he got his ass kicked. He was the most vocal, anti-liberal Democrat candidate that there was. He was outwardly against President Obama. Everything President Obama proposed, he said, I'm against it, no matter what. You see what happens when you don't actually stand up for your principles, you don't stand up for your beliefs, you don't actually argue, you don't actually have a sharp tone? The American people go, oh, that's not a leader. That's not a leader. This person has no real beliefs. And they're just a sleazy politician playing a game here. But the advice from MSNBC is what? Do that more. Be a sleazy politician more. Pretend to be centrist more. Be pro-establishment and pro-corporatist more. He said, loose cannon candidate might blow the Democrats' chances. No, if they don't have more so-called loose cannon candidates like Grayson, then they'll get their ass kicked again. The main lesson we should have taken away from the last election is have more people like Alan Grayson, have more people like Bernie Sanders, have more congressmen with guts, as he calls himself. Because when you do that, you win, and the facts actually show that. I know you guys want to pretend like facts don't exist and history isn't a thing, but it is, and they do. And we know what the answer is, no matter how much you want to close your eyes to it. Okay. Take a break. Then when we come back, we'll go to Rush Limbaugh, who lectures the Pope about capitalism, and Mike Huckabee, who resurrected a famous ad called Daisy with the nuclear weapons involved. I don't want to ruin it now, but just stick around. That's such a great story because he totally botched the meaning of the ad. So he's going to fear-monger, but the way he's fear-mongering is the opposite of the way that it makes sense to do so. All right, so stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
I met you when I was a teen, but then you were one as well. And I could play guitar just like ringing a bell. And time to wonder, in any other summer, could you have been my part-time lover to me? Listening to Stevie Wonder under the covers where we used to lay. And read stacks is what the speakers play. I'll be on tour almost every day. When I was home up in my flat is where we used to stay. Just watching the DVD, smoking illegal weed, getting high as two kites when we needed to breathe. We used each other's air just for the people to see, and stay up all night like when we needed to sleep. We go anywhere our minds would take us, and I'll say you would be a fool without your makeup. And you don't even need to worry about your weight, cause we can all be loved the way that God made us. And time's the only reason that we could break us, cause you would always tell me I'm away too much. Distance is relative to the time that it takes to get on a plane or make a mistake. So say it again. Oh, Nina, you should go, Nina, cause I ain't ever coming home. Nina, oh, won't you leave me now? And I've been living on the road, Nina, but then again you should know, Nina, cause that's you and me both. Nina, oh, won't you leave me now? And every weekend in the winter you'll be wearing my hoodie with your strings pulled tight. Face in the cold, taking day trips to the local where we'd eat on our own. Cause every day when I was away, we'd only speak on the phone. Watching Blue Planet, creating new habits. And as if we were two rabbits, and then you'd vanish back to the borough with all the Celtic. I disappear, you call me selfish, I understand, but I can't help it. I put my job over everything, except my family and friends. But you'll be in between forever, so I guess we'll have to take a step back, overlook the situation. Cause mixing business and feelings will only lead to complications. And I'm not saying we should be taking a break, just reevaluate. Wait quick before we make a mistake, and it's too late. So we can either deal with the pain or wait to get on a plane. But in a day we'll have to say it again. Oh, Nina, you should go, Nina, cause I ain't ever coming home. Nina, oh, won't you leave me now? And I've been living on the road, Nina, but then again you should know, Nina, cause that's you and me both. Nina, oh, won't you leave me now? And I'll go.
and love will go, but you can make it on your own. Sing that song, go, oh, won't you leave me now? People grow and fall apart, but you can mend your broken heart. Take it back, go, oh, won't you leave me now?
We're back, y'all. Let's go right to Rush Limbaugh. Oh boy, talking about Pope Francis. Something he likes to do quite often now. Rush Limbaugh decided to lecture the Pope on the virtues of laissez-faire capitalism. Let's watch.
You heard about the Pope? This is Pope Francis is in Bolivia, and he's come out with another one of his anti-capitalism remarks. He said, "Did you hear this, Don?" Okay. Well, then you better be. The Pope, Il Papa, the Vicar of Christ, said that unfettered capitalism is the devil's dung. Now, in the first place, would somebody find for me anywhere on this planet where there is at this very moment unfettered capitalism taking place? You can't, because there isn't. And I would go so far as to say that the United States doesn't even have half-baked capitalism going on right now. But unfettered, what is unfettered? Have you ever heard of unfettered socialism? Have you ever heard of unfettered communism? You ever heard of unfettered Marxism? What is this unfettered capitalism? It's just more bastardization of language to denigrate the greatest economic system yet devised that creates prosperity for the most and opportunity for everybody. And because it does that, it must be reviled. It must be impugned. It must be destroyed. So you put the word unfettered in front of it. And what that means is unregulated. Because, you know, capitalism is so unfair. Capitalism is so unfair that it has to be regulated in order to make sure the rich just don't steal and take everything. Well, there isn't any unfettered capitalism. And there hasn't been any unfettered capitalism in I don't know how long, if ever.
I know. When it doesn't work out, it's because they didn't implement a perfect vision of your ideology. I've heard this argument before, and I've heard it from the left when it came to communism in the Soviet Union. Oh, yeah, no, the problem was they thought they were implementing communism, but they weren't really implementing communism. See, if you implement real communism, then communism would work perfectly. There'd be no problems. It'd be a utopia. Really? Now, see, this is how you know. I always talk about how I am a real centrist. I'm an international centrist. In the U.S., I'm liberal, but internationally, I'm a centrist. And this is how you know that's the case. I'm telling you right now, I never bought that argument when people on the left made it about the Soviet Union and communism. Like, oh, no, we should try, you know, try communism maybe again at some point because that wasn't real communism. No, that's not true. Maybe it's possible that that is what happens when you, whenever you try to implement communism and you have all the good intentions possible, but no matter what, it always devolves into something similar like we saw in the Soviet Union. So that was the case there. But see, Russia is the opposite extreme. Russia, and you hear this argument oftentimes from, you know, Ayn Rand-level libertarians, where they're like, well, sure, at some places in history they had capitalism, but it wasn't really pure capitalism, because if it was pure capitalism, then everything would be a utopia. But no, maybe whenever they try to implement it, there were always big downsides to it, or it unfolded the way it's going to unfold no matter what. Whenever you try to implement a true system of capitalism, it just always ends up being screwed up in many ways. See, again, it shows you perfectly how Rush is as extreme as it gets on the right. And it's so funny because he would lash out against communists and the left too, but he doesn't realize he's mirroring their arguments, but he's doing it on the other side. So that's not true. We do have a few examples of pure capitalism being implemented, laissez-faire capitalism, unfettered capitalism, whatever you want to call it. Iraq, for example. Iraq, famously, after the war, the Bush administration basically implemented a flat tax, deregulation, had very few regulations on the economy, and we know how that worked out. By the way, another perfect example of ultra-right-wing economics or laissez-faire capitalism, Somalia. Now, I know right-wingers hate it when you point that out, but there's a reason why we point that out. It's true. You want to know why? Because in Somalia, they have no centralized government. Not only do they have no centralized government, they have a lot of guns, too. Right-wingers utopia, right? Everybody should have a gun, right to bear arms, and the government's too big. Okay, well, Somalia is a good example of that. By the way, another clear example of unfettered capitalism, the Industrial Revolution in the U.S. And what happened during the Industrial Revolution? The Gilded Age, more or less. You had 1% of the population, or 0.01% of the population, basically take all the money and give everybody else the crumbs. I mean, we've seen this happen throughout history. We've seen it time and time again. This was the era of the robber barons, as they were called. People living in tenement houses, one little one-bedroom apartments, like 10 people, 20 people in a tiny little apartment, going to work at the factory, dying young, getting black lung and dying at the age of 36 because there's no regulation of the marketplace, no child labor laws, none of that stuff. You're basically renting yourself and your body and your labor on the marketplace to get a wage which barely allows you to survive, if it does at all. And that's pure capitalism. And what do they say? Rush looks at that and goes, yes, best system. The best system to increase quality of life and provides opportunity for everybody. Let me ask you a question. Here he is ranting and raving about capitalism and how great he is. Well, do you think Jesus Christ would be in favor of capitalism? Remember, Rush is a Christian. He talks about it all the time. All right, so you're a Christian. Do you think Jesus is a capitalist? And I like how he says that, well, that's why the Pope is against capitalism, because it provides opportunity and a higher standard of living curve. Like, yeah, that's right. That's why the Pope is against an unfettered version of capitalism, because it's so great. And he wants to make sure to be against things that would raise people out of poverty, even though he spent his entire life fighting to try to get people out of poverty. It's so sad to listen to Rush Limbaugh talk about economics or government, because he just doesn't know nearly as much as he thinks he does. And we've heard him call the Pope a Marxist before, or a communist. Now he's just basically attacking him for attacking unfettered capitalism. But Rush, the reality is, anytime unfettered capitalism has ever been implemented, it's been disastrous. So would that, you know, does that empirical reality make you change your mind about the way it works? Nope, of course not. Nope. Capitalism is always the answer. I don't care what the question is. The answer is unfettered capitalism, and if you disagree with that, the problem is you. Well, there are other people who think that way, Rush. The religious fundamentalists. I don't care what the question is, the answer is this thing. That's what you're doing with capitalism. And even because there are downsides to it, it's never been a true version of unfettered capitalism. Because a true version of unfettered capitalism, well, that would be perfect. I know. Same thing with Islam, same thing with Christianity, same thing with all. It's just not, there's problems with it, it's just not a perfect version of it. But if it was implemented perfectly, if everybody was a Christian, if everybody was a Muslim, then it'd be perfect. If everybody had unfettered capitalism, then it'd be perfect. We know. Okay. Now we go to Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee decided to resurrect a famous political ad run by Lyndon B. Johnson called Daisy. So let's run the ad here. This is Mike Huckabee's new ad, new version of Lyndon Johnson's old ad. And then I'll explain the hilariously ironic backstory. Flowers in the field. And now he's fear-mongering about the Iran ad. There's writing on the screen here. The Iran deal, I should say. So what he's doing there is he's trying to say, oppose the nuclear negotiations and the peace deal with Iran because, oh, look, a scary nuclear explosion that we just showed you on screen. And there was a cute little white girl who was picking flowers, and then she was killed by the evil enemy. They're so bad. They're so evil. Now, the original ad, the Daisy ad, was run by Lyndon B. Johnson against Barry Goldwater in the presidential election because Barry Goldwater was viewed as a war hawk. So the Johnson campaign said, this was back when Democrats had balls, so they ran the ad saying, look, you vote for this guy, there could be fucking nuclear war that happens at some point with Russia. Are you sure that that's, you know, what you want to happen here? Why don't you vote for the people who are for peace? Us, the Democrats. So that was the idea behind the ad. That they did, yes, it was fear-mongering. They were doing fear-mongering. But in their mind, they thought, well, this is legitimate because, no, seriously, this guy's a war hawk and he can get us into deep shit if you elect him. So, of course, Lyndon Johnson ended up winning the election, and we know what history was like from there on in. Of course, it was a much more – Lyndon Johnson is a very mixed character when he was actually in power because he continued Vietnam and extended Vietnam to his fault, for sure. He did the war on poverty at home and some decent things domestically, signed the Civil Rights Act, signed the Voting Rights Act, all that stuff. He was bad on Vietnam, for sure. But when he was running, he was like, well, they're more anti-war than we are, and here's an ad, you should be afraid. Look, it's a cute little girl, and there's a nuclear explosion. So that was when it was used back then. Today, how is Huckabee using this? He's using this to oppose a peace deal. So wait, Mike, you're the one that's pro-war. You're the one that wants war in the Middle East. You've spoken about it repeatedly. You're the one that's more aggressive against Iran. So for you to run that doesn't make any sense for you to run that ad. That would be like back in the day if Barry Goldwater ran that ad against Lyndon Johnson. Barry Goldwater was a bigger interventionist and was more in favor of war. And he's going to run an ad saying, oh, look at this. The peacenik on the other side is going to lead to the fucking nuclear explosion. No, you will, because you're the one that wants conflict. He's the one that wants to try to get peace. So President Obama and the Democrats and John Kerry, they're trying to get peace with Iran. And Mike Huckabee's like, a nuclear explosion. Look at these war hawks. But you're the war hawk. What are you talking about? You flipped it on its head. You flipped the ad on its head. But that shows you, man, today's Republicans, they are so thoroughly Orwellian that they embody that term perfectly. Everything is its opposite now. So So when they say we need, you know, sustained peace, they mean we need sustained war. Their version of peace is to always have American power and influence and empire waging wars all over the place. You know, protect your civil liberties means continue to have the NSA spy on everything that everybody does. I mean, you go down the list. We need more freedom. Okay, lock more people up for smoking pot. That's the opposite of freedom. You can't say I want more freedom as you're taking away freedom. That doesn't make any sense. That's contradictory. Same thing with this ad. Oh, these are the other side. They're going to unleash the nuke, even though we're the party that has people in it that literally said we should nuke Iran. Fucking Sheldon Adelson spoke about it. Duncan Hunter, a politician, a congressman, a Republican congressman, said, yeah, just drop a nuke in the desert to let them know we mean business. So your party is the party. Louis Gohmert calls for bombing them all the time. John McCain saying bomb Iran. So your party is the party that wants to have the mushroom cloud, but you run an ad that says, goddamn Democrats want a mushroom cloud. I can't take it, man. I can't take it. And by the way, you fucking jerk-offs, have you read the deal? Everybody on the right attacking the deal with Iran, attacking it. Read it! What does it say? They make it seem like President Obama and John Kerry on page one of the deal are like, okay, so it's settled then. We're going to give you a nuke. But that's not what the deal says. The deal says the opposite. The deal prevents them from getting a nuke. If you read the fucking deal, you'd know that. The deal says the IAEA can go in there and look at all their nuclear facilities all the time, round the clock, 24/7. Do you understand that there are hard caps on the amount that they can enrich their uranium? So they're only allowed to use uranium for research, scientific research, and for their power grid for their people. You know, nuclear power, like virtually every modern nation has, where they have some nuclear plants that provide power. That's why Iran wants it too. And by the way, they're allowed under international law to have that. So the U.S. doesn't even have a right to say in the deal, we want to take that away too. You can't do that. They're allowed under international law to have to enrich uranium for power for their citizens. So the IAEA can look at them whenever the fuck they want to look at them and monitor them. And they don't have a nuclear weapons program anymore. And all we have to do in return is take away sanctions gradually when they prove that they're abiding by the deal. But what does Mike Huckabee do? He pretends like the deal is the exact opposite. He pretends like the Democrats are the ones that want war, and the Democrats are just handing a nuke over to Iran. That's not true. The problem, the people who are not in favor of peace when it comes to this Iran situation, Likud, Netanyahu, Israel, right wing in Israel, and the right wing here in the U.S. Now, the right wing in Iran is fucked up, too. The Ayatollah is a fucking asshole. Everybody knows that. So the right, you have the right wing acting up everywhere, and the moderates and the liberals trying to come together to get peace. But the right wingers here in America flip it on its head completely and say, the people who want peace are the ones who want war. Look, a mushroom cloud, cute little white girl, be afraid. The only thing I'm afraid of, Mike, is you. Okay. Now we're going to talk about immigration, because of course Fox News had to do a segment on it where they try to slam all immigrants because of the actions of one. That's their go-to, man. With black people, one black person does a crime. Use that to demonize the entire black community. One Muslim does terrorism. Use that to demonize all Muslims. One immigrant commits a crime. Use that to try to deport all immigrants. That's the standard move there on Fox. But, of course, if it's a white person, Dylan Roof, does terrorism, nobody ever says, hey, maybe we should profile white people. Maybe all white people are the problem. Maybe white culture is the problem. Never. It's Fox. There's no consistency with how they think. All right, here we go. The Fox News pastor, Robert Jeffers, decided to exploit a recent tragedy involving an undocumented immigrant who is a murderer. So the right has been using this incident to argue that there should basically be a crackdown on all immigrants. O'Reilly was doing that last week. You see more of it today on Fox News. So let's watch.
Churches Across the country, dozens are offering sanctuary to illegals. So, do churches have a responsibility to turn over illegal immigrants, or are they a welcome home and safe haven for all? Here to debate it, President of the Southern Evangelical Seminary, Dr. Richard Land, and Fox News contributor, Dr. Robert Jeffress. Gentlemen, good Sunday to both of you. Appreciate you being here. Dr. Jeffress, first to you. An illegal immigrant shows up at your church. He's hungry. He needs help. Maybe he has a child with him, and you're going to call ICE and turn him in?
Well, look, we're not going to check the immigration status of people who attend our church, but we're also not going to harbor illegal immigrants, criminals like some of these churches are doing. Look, a lot of these liberal churches that harbor illegal immigrants who are criminals say they're following the example of Jesus. The only problem is they're following the Jesus of their imagination rather than the Jesus of the Bible. Look, Jesus was not this wimpy little guy who walked around munching sunflower seeds and saying nice things to people. The real Jesus of the Bible said, "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's." That is, obey the government.
So render unto Caesar's what is Caesar's means be a dick to immigrants and deport every single one. I'm pretty sure it doesn't. I'm pretty sure that render unto Caesar what is Caesar's means pay your taxes. That's what that means. And let's be clear here. So if you're making that argument, you're in favor of render unto Caesar's what is Caesar's, that passage in the Bible, which usually you like to ignore, but today you're bringing it up because you think it's convenient to you. So I take it you've never argued for tax cuts, right, Pastor Jeffers? This guy's a well-known right-wing evangelical pastor. Of course he has. He's never met a right-wing political cause that he wasn't in favor of. So when it's render unto Caesar's what is Caesar's, does that extend to pay your taxes so that we can pay for Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, education, things like that? Is he on that page? Of course not. Don't be ridiculous. Then he switches completely. And he's like, forget that Bible verse because it doesn't help me now. Let me point out a different one. Spare me. And the best part is, this is the Jesus of their imagination, okay? This is the Bible. This is Christianity of their imagination. This isn't real Christianity. I know, man, I know. That whenever people use Christianity to actually treat people well, that's in your imagination. Jesus wasn't like a wimpy guy who cared about people. Jesus was much more like Steven Seagal in the 1990s, kicking people's asses and whatnot, hurting immigrants. That's what Jesus was. Again, it's the right-wingers who always misinterpret many things in the Bible. Like, for example, he says, the Jesus of their imagination. How about on abortion? The entire right-wing Christian movement that likes to cite the Bible to say, that's why we're anti-abortion, they have it totally backwards. If you actually read what the Bible says about abortion, there's parts of the Bible where God performs abortions. He goes through Samaria and rips out the fetuses in the stomachs of all the women. Of course, Samaria back then was a particular part of Palestine in the Bible. So God's ripping out fetuses from pregnant women's bodies? That would be an abortion! That's what that would be. There's another part of the Bible where they talk about how if your wife cheats on you, you have to give her what's called bitter water, which is like a toxic potion. And then if she drinks the bitter water and she miscarries, a.k.a. aborts her fetus, well, that's okay, because if she aborted, that means that the fetus was of the man that she cheated with. But if she drinks the bitter water and she doesn't end up having an abortion, well, that means it's your baby and it's all good. So what's the message in the Bible there? If your wife cheats on you, get an abortion. But the Jesus of their imagination. No, the Jesus of your imagination is the Jesus that's anti-abortion. So let's be clear about that. But then, so let's get even more specific here. Look, his argument is, all these liberals who are being kind to immigrants. I mean, come on, that's fake Jesus. That's not real Jesus. The Bible does not say that you're supposed to be good to immigrants. Come on, come on. Well, why don't we actually go to the Bible? Leviticus 19, lines 33 to 34, quote, when a stranger sojourns with you, by the way, sojourner is another way of saying immigrant, basically, person who's traveling, foreigner who's like traveling in your land. When a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. That does sound pretty anti-immigrant, doesn't it? Deuteronomy 27:19, quote, cursed be anyone who perverts the justice due to the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow. That seems pretty clear as well. Leviticus 25:35. If your brother becomes poor and cannot maintain himself with you, you shall support him as though he were a stranger and a sojourner, and he shall live with you. So there they're saying, hey, treat your family as good as you treat the sojourner, the traveler, the foreigner, the immigrant. And of course, you're supposed to be polite, and you're supposed to allow a foreigner who doesn't have anything into your home with you, and you feed them and you take care of them. So not only does the Bible say, okay, be lenient on the immigrants and just let them be, the Bible says, no, go out of your way to help them. Bring them in your home. Feed them. Take care of them. He shall live with you, it says. But the Bible really hates immigrants. And Proverbs 31, lines 8 to 9, open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all who are destitute. Open your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights of the poor and the needy. And look, I'm just giving you Old Testament stuff here. There's plenty of stuff. In the New Testament, Jesus is even more hippie-ish. Okay? I mean, obviously Jesus isn't in the Old Testament, but in the New Testament, the cornerstone of Jesus is how much he says, be good to the poor, be good to the sick, be good to the people who are downtrodden in society. They will inherit the kingdom of God. But of course, they have to flip it on its head. Why? Because they care more about their right-wing political ideology than they actually do about their religion. That's what it really comes down to. And finally, let me just add this last fact because I think it's very important in this whole discussion. They used a case where an undocumented immigrant murdered somebody. They're using that case to then make the argument that, well, come on, we should really deport all these immigrants because look at what happens. Here's what you need to understand. That undocumented immigrant who committed the murder, he was already deported multiple times, and he came back in. So in other words, the policy that they're in favor of exists. And by the way, I agree with the idea that if an undocumented immigrant commits a crime, yes, get rid of him. So the guy was here before, committed a crime, and they said, okay, well, you had your chance. See ya. Sent him out. They did it multiple times. Multiple times. He still came back in, and he ended up killing somebody. So the problem is just that they didn't catch him quick enough this time. That's all it is. It's not like they're not trying. If they deported him multiple times already, obviously they know who to go after and that person's not allowed here. So this idea of use this incident to call for something else, the mindset behind that is, use the actions of one immigrant to say, fuck them all. Get them all out of here. That's the argument, and you know that's the argument. And you've seen the same argument made on Fox News when it comes to black people and Muslims also. Whenever there's a black guy who commits a crime, thug, gangster, and it's the decline of morality in the family in America. It's representative of a rotting culture. Whenever it's a Muslim who commits a crime or does terrorism, oh, yeah, religion to peace my ass. The Muslims, they're always the guilty ones. But by the way, when it's a white person who does terrorism, Dylann Roof recently in the South, oh, just mentally ill person with issues, deeply disturbed. This is an anomaly. This isn't like all the other white people. Remember that. Funny how there's no consistency on Fox News. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, Alex Jones weighed in on gay rights, and you're going to laugh at it. And then we have a guy who suffers like a panic attack, seeing a Nazi flag and a Confederate flag. We'll break down that issue. And Bill Cosby still has a defender. Good googly moogly. You'll see who that is, or what group that is, I should say, when we come back. Stay right there.
Tim and Bob. Bobby Valentino. You know how we do. It's another one.
I saw you walking down the railroad. You look like an angel, drink out of heaven, girl. I was blown away by your sexiness. Now all I have to do is catch up to you.
Slow down, I just wanna get to know you. But don't turn around, cause that pretty round thing looks good.
Walk with me, you'll be impressed by the game that I kick you.
me. I'm in awe cause you shine like the sun. Let me be the one to enjoy you. Enjoy you. Girl,
gay rights. Alex Jones weighed in on the proliferation of gay rights in America, and his take is classic Alex Jones.
Let's move on to the gay marriage thing. I'm a libertarian, but if you're a real listener and not somebody with a script, you would know not hundreds but thousands of times. Have you listened to my show for the first 18 years? I didn't even cover this. I don't get into what you do in your bedroom. I am not in people's bedrooms. I am not a Pharisee. I'm not a hypocrite. My world does not revolve around sex either, and so I'm sick of it. It's a football issue. It's not a federal issue. It's a distraction to be passed back and forth. Now, the truth is there is a move at the UN. There is a move to sexualize children. Sumner Redstone has said that, and it's nobody's business to be trying to target children with Heather Has Two Mommies or you can't say boy or girl because somebody may not identify as that. That is space cult, suicide cult, exterminism, craziness. The eugenics transhumanist cult wants to confuse the general species ahead of rendering us down and removing us. The decision has been made. Cheer up. The post-human era is dawning. The plan is an asexual humanoid, even if they decide to keep us around, stated in hundreds of textbooks.
What? What the fuck was that? What stated in hundreds of textbooks? The things you just said? Oh, I'd bet any amount of money that's not in any textbooks. What are you saying? It's classic Alex Jones because he starts out like, you know, I'm a libertarian, but. Always with Alex Jones, it's funny how there's a but after his I'm a libertarian part. To all the real libertarians out there, and there are many real libertarians out there, what do you think of Alex Jones? No, you know what he is? He's a conspiracy theorist first and second, third, or maybe 26th on his list is libertarianism. Okay, so this idea, I'm a libertarian, but, yeah, that sounds a lot like, I'm a racist, but, and then usually it's followed by something racist. I'm a libertarian, but, yeah, the whole gay rights thing and equality under the law and let people do whatever the fuck they want to do. I'm on that side except for when I'm not. Okay, so you're not a libertarian on that issue. Just say it. Just say it. And then he's like, well, the UN, their plan is to sexualize kids. The UN is trying to sexualize kids? I missed the memo. That seems like a pretty big story to me. I would think that everybody would report on that. Why is it that nobody reported on that? Must be because they're part of the Illuminati Bilderberg conspiracy with the Rockefellers and the New World Order and the FEMA camps, black helicopters, chemicals in the fucking apple juice, something. Must be that. And then he says that, you know, the problem is, I know how they're sexualizing kids. Heather has two mommies. That's what they're telling the kids. And they're telling them that you refer to them as what they want to be referred to them as. And? So what, you're against the fact that some transgender kids exist where they know from a very young age and they want to take a medical action on that front? So you're against them being referred to the type of gender they want to be referred to as? And you're against, you idiot, the reason they're doing, they have books now that are like, oh, Heather has two mommies, or whatever the fuck it's called. The reasoning behind that is they want kids to know, because kids can be fucking assholes and they can be really tribalistic with each other. They want them to know, hey, you can't judge this person because they have, you know, two parents of the same sex or something like that. So they're teaching them tolerance. They're teaching them open-mindedness. The idea is not to tell the straight kids, you have to be gay. That's not what's going on here. But see, they always, when the right wing has no argument, they just make shit up. So they say, well, we can't win the argument on the facts, so we'll do a straw man. And we'll say, you guys aren't just trying to teach tolerance and equality. What you're trying to do is you're trying to say that the straight kids need to be called by the other gender and that they themselves are going to be forced on gay dates. That's a story we did last week. Some right-wing radio host was like, it's official. The government is forcing kindergartners to gay date. They shamelessly make it up. And then, of course, at the end, more classic Alex Jones. You know, I am a libertarian, but the thing with the kids and the gays and the this and that, it's a space cult, suicide, transhumanism, asexuality. You just took a whole bunch of different words and slapped them together in a sentence and acted like they made sense. They don't make sense. What do you mean space cult? What does that mean? Space cult? Space cult. What the fuck is a space cult? What are you saying? What does that mean? Are there aliens that I don't know about that you know about? Let me guess. They're Bilderberg aliens. They must be Bilderberg aliens. Again, this idea that gay people are trying to make, or LGBT activists are trying to make everybody asexual. Why would they do that? No gay rights activist has ever said that. They've just said, for people who are gay, treat them equally. Treat them with tolerance. But he makes it up and says, no, that's not their real goal, because, of course, he knows their real goal. Their real goal is to get all of us to be asexual so we don't reproduce and we don't have kids. And the reason why the gays don't want us to have kids is because they want humanity to go extinct. Because you know how those gays are. They're a lot like Nazis, how they want to just wipe people out. No, Alex, you have to understand that you're making all this shit up, and this is why it's hard for people to take you seriously. And I get it, man. We've spoken about Alex Jones before, and there's plenty of things he talks about that I agree with him on. He's against war. He's against American imperialism. I'm 100% with you on that, man, and we argue for it on a day-in and day-out basis. You're against the NSA spying on absolutely everybody in the country. Yeah, I'm with you on that, man. We could talk about that. You might be against the drug war, too, maybe. I don't know for sure on that one, but there are plenty of areas where we can agree. But you caricature everything about yourself when you start talking about the space cult, transhumanism, asexuality, something. It's not real. Stop. Okay. Next. Clyde Smith was a high school freshman in 1971 in Alabama, and he posted a picture of his old textbook online so everybody could see it. And what it shows is the insane propaganda that an entire generation was subject to in the South. So his textbook was called History for Schools by Charles Grayson Somersell, and the book was instituted in 1955 in Alabama and taught from well into the 1970s. So I'm going to give you some of the teachings in a second, but just remember that whenever we talk about race issues in America, you always have conservatives who are very quick to say, nah, come on, jumping to the conclusion of racism so quick and pretending like people hate other people or they feel superior or whatever. Stop saying that, people on the left. You know, you play that card too much and it's not true, and you should be more open-minded and fair in your judgment of, you know, people in the South or people who are really conservative or whatever. Now, the thing is, at face value, that sounds kind of reasonable, right? Because it's just like, well, I don't know, stop jumping to conclusions, stop painting with a broad brush about Southerners or conservatives or whatever. It sounds reasonable at face value, but there's a problem with that. And it's a problem that oftentimes new atheists talk about this problem in other contexts. But the problem is, what kind of a narrative have people in the South been taught? What's the pervasive line of thinking in the culture in the South? What's the, to them, this is a good way of putting it, what's the, of course, belief to them? Where if you, you know, you get some of them alone in a room and they had a few drinks, they'll say, come on, of course, X, fill in the blank with whatever it is. So now, let me give you again, from the 1970s, this guy's textbook from 1971, here's what specifically white people were learning in public schools in the South. So first we have here, a textbook going on to explain that, yeah, okay, yeah, maybe there were problems with slavery or whatever, but the masters gave the workers good clothes. They were nice and warm and comfy. And, quote, in one respect, the textbook says, the slave was almost always better off than free laborers, white or black, the same period. The slave received the best medical care which the times could offer. Okay, this is a history textbook used in the South in 1971, and it was continued to be used later on, too. This isn't old at all! And they're saying in there, they're teaching this as if it's history, as if it's a fact. They say, no, you're misunderstanding. The slaves oftentimes had it better than free laborers, white or black, because they got the best medical care available. Come again? Number one, that's totally made up. Number two, you're talking about the health of slaves, and you didn't start off with saying how whippings were happened on a regular basis, how there were rapes that happened on a regular basis. That's why, for the longest time, black Americans know this very well. Throughout their history, plenty of examples of the slave owners raping the slaves and having kids, and then they wouldn't take care of the kids. So you thought it was more appropriate to say they had good health care, even though they didn't, than to say, well, when it comes to the health of slaves, they were property, and they were treated as such. They were, you know, they were whipped, they were hurt, they were forced to work extreme hours. They weren't viewed as a person, quite literally weren't viewed as a person. None of that was brought up. They have good health care, so I hear. Does this sound like propaganda to you? That's because it is. An entire generation recently of Southern white people learned this. And then we wonder why people get mad that you took down the Confederate flag. Because in their mind, they bought into the propaganda. They thought, what do you mean? We were the good people all along. We were taking care of our slaves. We were treating them good. In the North, those assholes were treating them like shit. They didn't even have good health care there. They had good health care here. This is if you understand that this is what they really thought in the South, then you begin to get it, why they're angry when you take down the Confederate flag and you say it doesn't represent good things. They think, what do you mean? No, we were the good guys. Our history books told us, so I know it. Okay, we got another example here. Next one says, with all the drawbacks of slavery, it should be noted that slavery was the earliest form of social security in the United States. It was the legal responsibility of the master to take care of aged workers. It was against the law to emancipate a slave after he was too old to work. Oh, my goodness. They're arguing that slavery is like a social safety net program. Yeah, it's just like your grandma getting $1,000 in the mail from the government so she can get some food and pay the light bill. That's what it's like. That's what slavery is. When you own another human being and force them to work against their will. Yeah, you know, it's like free health care, something like that, you know? That's what it's like. They also act like it wasn't the case that slaves were forced to work until they died. They were. They said it was against the law to emancipate a slave after he was too old to work. And they say that as if it's a good thing. It's against the law to free a slave after they're too old to work. So if they're really old, you can't free them. So you're saying it's preferable that they stayed in chains? Like, oh, weren't the masters nice? They let them stay in chains. They were kind enough to let them stay in chains after they're too old. Again, they worked until they died anyway. So, okay, they die, and then after they're dead, the master has to take care of the slave. The twisted logic used, but this was pumped into the heads of Southern white people into the 1970s. There are a lot of people now. So middle-aged white Southerners were taught this garbage. That's why there's such a divide, guys. That's why they don't understand. When the North is outraged by the Confederate flag and the fact that it represents secession, you tried to leave the United States of America. You were traitors. You were treasonous. You tried to leave the country so you can keep owning people. And they're genuinely shocked when we're like, hey, by the way, you guys were the bad guys. Ah, how dare you offend my heritage? My textbook said I treated my slaves nicely. The reason I tell you all this, man, is because the battle's never over. The war is never over. The battle of ideas, the war of ideas, where you have to remind people what the proper principles are and what makes sense, what's upholding civil liberties, what is fighting for somebody's rights, what's fighting for a better system. Because in the minds of those people, they genuinely believe, no, the better system was the one we had. We were the good people all along. I know because my history book told me. Who was it that said, if you control the minds of the youth, you control the society? That's totally true. And the way to win this is to actually teach facts and do real education and do real history and educate the population so they don't have ass-backwards ideas that they think are on point. Okay. Next. There's a man in Connecticut who basically suffered a panic attack and got physically ill when he saw a Confederate flag and a Nazi flag at a flea market near his house. He said the following, quote, I was shaking and almost vomiting. I had to run. My grandmother had numbers tattooed on her body by Nazis. So this is somebody who has direct personal experience with this, which explains the, you know, very strong reaction to seeing the Confederate flag and the Nazi flag. The Record Journal reports, quote, police investigated the man's complaint but said the merchant had not broken any laws, and Mayor William W. Dickinson Jr. said he looked into the matter after the man contacted his office. He said, I had to check with the chief over what is actionable and what isn't. Unless something violates state or federal law, there's no jurisdiction for government to do anything. We had to ask, is it something controlled by law? Now, a spokesperson for the Anti-Defamation League came out as well and said the following, it's unfortunate that under the law, people have the right to sell these things, but it doesn't mean that they should sell these things. It's not a crime, but I would call it hate. Okay, so now on top of that story, we have another story that came out over the weekend, which found that, in fact, let me just give you the headline. The Guardian says, quote, New Orleans mayor lays out broad plan to rid city of Confederate memorials and relics. So, what's the overall takeaway here? Now, my takeaway from this is much more nuanced than people would have probably guessed, but the reality is, so let's go to the first story here first. If somebody gets physically ill when they see at a flea market somebody selling a Confederate flag or a Nazi flag, does that then mean that it is, by definition, illegal and you should never be able to sell those things? No. And in fact, I feel bad for the guy that he had that experience and he was really emotionally moved by seeing those flags, but that that doesn't mean that it's against the law. That doesn't mean you can force them to take it down. And that definitely doesn't mean that you can try to, you know, call everybody up to say, is there anything we could do legally to try to stop this person from selling those things? Because then actually you become wrong when you try to do that. Now, people might get mad at me for coming to that conclusion and taking that position. But, guys, I said it a million times, and I'm going to say it again. We live in a free society. So I took a stand when you look at the Confederate flag flying on state grounds at a capital in the South. Because that's public tax dollars on the land. But black people pay for that with their tax dollars. And then you're going to fly a fucking flag and put it right in their face? That's their government. That's their land, too. So that's just beyond disrespectful, and that's wrong to fly it there. That's not right. Now, you guys know I know what those flags stand for. We know what the Nazi flag stands for. We know that the Confederate flag stands for racism and slavery and segregation and things like that. But that doesn't mean that you're allowed to ban a symbol that's a bad symbol outside of, you know, from public grounds. Because then, again, what's next? So what if this person accidentally flipped the channel, turned on AMC, and they're playing Schindler's List, and it's a picture of a fucking flying Nazi flag right in front of his face? Do they have a right to then say, I'm calling AMC, and I'm going to try to get legal charges pressed against them because I was emotionally affected from seeing a Nazi flag in context in a movie? No. And does it also mean that everybody who were to buy a Nazi flag or a Confederate flag, by definition, is being racist? Well, what if you're buying the Confederate flag to make a movie about the Civil War? Are you racist because you bought it to put it in historical context? Are you racist because you buy a Nazi flag to do a Nazi movie? Are you racist if you buy a Nazi flag and then you do an art project where you shit on it and you piss on it? Is it racist because you bought it even though your intentions were the exact opposite when you're defiling the flag? I mean, see, that's the thing, is you can't make these broad, generalized, sweeping rules and statements when it comes to symbols like that. And on top of that, I've always said I like it when people buy these flags and they fly them, because then I know where the idiots are. I know who to avoid, because they're saying, I'm a jackass. Look at the flag I'm flying. Look at what I'm supporting. So even if somebody buys it because they really do support it, great. I'd rather know where all the neo-Nazis are than not know where they are and wander into the wrong neighborhood at night and somebody recognizes me from the show and they do something with me that's fucked up. They beat me up or whatever, right? So you have to be more nuanced in how you approach this and how you think. And unfortunately, the slippery slope has gone a little too far. Like, I'm 100% with the idea of taking down the flag from public lands. I'm 100% with the idea that when you stigmatize it and you let everybody know, yes, this is what this represents. It does represent slavery. It does represent oppression. It does represent all these things. But to take the next step and say nobody should sell it ever and we should basically ban it, well, you can't even do that. We have a First Amendment. We have freedom of speech. Even if you're offended by something, it's allowed to stand. The ACLU, of all groups, defended the KKK to march through a majority Jewish town and black town. This is going back years now in a famous First Amendment case. The court said, look, we hate these guys. The ACLU said, look, we hate these guys too, but they have a right, if they're going to be peaceful, to get their message out. Well, it's the same thing with this. You can't stop somebody from selling or buying flags like that, because that's fundamentally anti-American, whether or not you realize it. Now, finally, to the other point here, the other story, how they're planning on ridding New Orleans of Confederate memorials and relics. Here's my take on that. If it's a memorial that's like showing the Confederate army or Confederate figures in a positive light, yes, get rid of it, 100%. Because you shouldn't. That's like having a fucking Hitler statue in the middle of Germany and everybody still goes and pays homage to it. That's ridiculous. Of course you take that down. Far as to say, even in museums, in historical context, you take down everything Confederate related. Well, that's just stupid. That's just stupid. You know, it's like saying you have to take down a Holocaust museum because we want to pretend like the Holocaust didn't happen. Well, that's actually counterproductive. We want to take down a museum, a Confederate museum, because we want to pretend like it didn't happen. Well, it did happen. Now, again, in the museum, it should be in context. Hey, these guys stood for slavery. These guys were racist assholes, yada, yada. But here's a picture of Robert E. Lee. Here's a uniform, whatever. Don't just wipe the slate clean if you don't like something. You have to be nuanced in how you think. If the memorial, again, is showing them in a positive light, take it down, I'm with you. I'm in favor of all the people who, like, wrote Black Lives Matters on statues that were pro-Confederate, that were, like, you know, almost bragging with where they put them and what they represented. I'm with that 100%. I'm in favor of them defiling the statues. But if it's in a museum, that's a different story, and if you defile it, then you're being fucked up, because it's in context. And they're not glorifying it if it's in a museum. Okay, so again, we got to be more nuanced in how we approach this. All the companies that are banned video games that have the Confederate flag. The fuck is that? Ban any movie that ever had anything racist in it. So any movie that ever used the N-word, any, you know, fuck, man. Django Unchained, gone. Training Day with Alonzo, Denzel playing Alonzo, he uses the N-word, gone. I mean, I know I said it a trillion times, you guys are tired of hearing it, but you have to be more open-minded in how you approach this, and you have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. It's not as simple as everything ever that involves the Confederate flag or the Confederacy, erase it from history. And it's not as simple as you leave it up absolutely everywhere and you pretend like it's great. No, the answer is much more nuanced than that, and unfortunately, I see very few people believing that it is nuanced. They like to, you know, join one side and go rah-rah, or join the other side and go rah-rah. Try to squeeze in one or two more here real quick. Anti-porn activists are looking for some new friends in Congress. Recently, Congress did something actually very good in that they went after sexual assault in the military and they went after human trafficking. And so right-wing moralists took concern over these legitimate issues and they linked it to porn. So according to The Hill, Patrick Truman, president and CEO of National Center on Sexual Exploitation, said the following, quote, "It may be an uncomfortable topic, but we're already dealing with sexual assaults in the military and on college campuses. That doesn't come out of the blue." So what's his argument? He's saying, yeah, that's a huge problem, and let's all fight that. But remember, it didn't come out of the blue. Blame net porn. Blame all kinds of porn. Let's ban it. That's what they're getting at. And this is something that the right wing has been trying to do for years. This is a push that's been happening for the longest time. Even before there was the internet, you had the Pat Robertson crowd, the Jerry Falwell crowd. That's one of their things, is they would come after porn. And of course, according to Scientific American, the idea that porn leads to sexual assault and perversion and all that stuff, untrue. They say, quote, "Increased availability of adult material is associated with a decrease in sexual violence." They say it's not proven to decrease violence, but there's an association. So they say there's a causation correlation thing going on here. But what we know is wrong is the idea that porn increases sexual violence. It doesn't, okay? And actually, I'd go as far as to say there actually is a clear link, in my opinion. If you take a society and you take away any other sexual outlet that they have, to release stress and get that out of their system, of course that's going to manifest itself in other gross, weird ways where people who don't know any better might assault somebody or take advantage of women or do things like that. When you have freely available pornography, the society is going to use it and they're going to be much more relaxed and less stressed and they're not going to be as pent up and aggressive. Okay, I mean, again, this stuff should be fairly obvious, but the right-wing moralists take the opposite approach. They say, porn is bad because porn is bad and it's leading to all these negative things, even though it's probably helping with those negative things in the sense that it's reducing those problems. So, look, I said it once, I'll say it again. These people on the right, if they want to wage a war against human nature, by all means, you are certainly not going to win. Seriously, their idea of trying to fix society is, let's try to make it so people don't want to fuck. Let's try to make it so people don't want to blow loads. Go ahead. Try to convert people to your side. We'll stand up on the side of, I'm in favor of you being, you know, sexually free and being happier and doing whatever you want with your body as long as it's, you know, consenting adults. I'll argue for that side. You guys could argue for the, wag my finger at you, don't have fun or look at boobies or anything like that, because that would be wrong. Oh, we'll crush you in that argument all day long. Okay. I'm out of time. And, fuck, man. I had two more I needed to get to, but they're going to have to hold off. I love you guys, man. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Follow me on Twitter, at Kyle Klinsky. Facebook page is facebook.com/secular talk. Give us a like over there. You know what the YouTube channel is. Check that out. Follow Lilith, our social media manager, at Stardust Lilith on Twitter. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Peace, everybody.